Hello and welcome back to another edition of NAEMT Radio. I'm your host, Rob Lawrence, and we've got an interesting discussion lined up for you today. How do I know that? Because we've had the sort of preamble discussion and it's looking really cool. Today's topic is community population health needs through MIH CP programs. And to help me along today are Melinda Wilson and Chief Justin Duncan. I'd like everybody to do them sort of self-introductions. So, Justin, why don't you give us your backstory, where you are now and where you're from, etc.
Sure. Thank you, Rob. Appreciate the opportunity. My name is Justin Duncan, as Rob had mentioned. I hail from rural Missouri. I serve as the president of the Missouri EMS Association. I chair the subcommittee on mobile integrated healthcare and community paramedic work for our state advisory council. And I also run a rural ambulance service, Washington County Ambulance District, that is a regional healthcare system serving over 1,500 square miles in three different counties of rural Missouri. We have one critical access hospital in that entire area, and we have a very robust mobile integrated healthcare community paramedic program, along with the standard 911 interfacility transfer work that an ambulance service would do.
So you've actually started to set us up beautifully. So you're in a rural location, you're in a potential ambulance desert. Obviously, doing what you're doing is going to be a key part to the discussion. Melinda, give us an intro. And also, interestingly, where are you now and where are you going?
Good morning. My name's Melinda Wilson. As Rob mentioned, I happen to be on a cruise at the moment and we are headed to Haiti. And I was actually looking at the coast of Cuba while I was having breakfast this morning because that's where we currently are located in the ocean. I have been in EMS for about 11 years. I've spent 9 of that as a paramedic. I've got a pretty wide background. I've spent time working in a hospital where I serve as an RN level 1 trauma center in our area. Started working in community paramedicine about a year and a half ago when GMR, Global Medical Response, started up community paramedicine across the U.S. We contracted out with a very large hospital system locally to start doing advanced care at home through Medicare's advanced care at home waiver that is offered to any hospital that would like to take place on it. My team currently focuses on taking patients from the hospital under hospitalist care, taking them home and continuing their admission. What that looks like for us is the hospitalist or the physician that is over their hospital care is still the physician responsible for them. They still have all of their record charted in their medical record from the hospital. We provide every service the hospital could at home for them. We take people from the ER as well as from the floor. We plan on focusing on acute care follow-up in the future. And right now we are simply doing the acute care admissions.
Great. So thank you both for your introductions there. And of course, one of the key, I think, points that drive us all together here is you're both sitting in very rural parts of the United States, where, as I said, there's potential ambulance deserts, there's potential coverage gaps and issues, there's economic issues, there's services closing, there's hospitals closing. So to create some sort of community solution to reduce the numbers of people either being admitted or readmitted is obviously a key activity for both of you. Explain the detail of your program, Justin, and what I want to end up with is the takeaway of why you're doing it, how we're paying for it, and if it's not being paid for, what's the cost benefit of it, and therefore what can others take away from listening to this? So 4 questions, you can take them in any order you want.
Sure. And it kind of goes under one big umbrella. And I think that the mission is take care of sick people, right? Melinda cited her years here. I have been a paramedic now for 21 years and never wanted to be a boss. Had the desire to take care of sick people. I think that was always our primary mission. And I think the attraction to the business is almost false. When folks think of our world, it's red light and siren and everybody's sick and everybody's, you know, on the verge of death. And we all know that that is just simply not the reality. And so accepting that EMS really doesn't describe us anymore. Sure, a long time ago it did, but really embracing that mobile healthcare that sometimes we take people to the hospital. But let's also then accept that there's sometimes it's really okay to leave people at home or have an alternate destination or loop them in with primary care. So our program is multifaceted from the MIH side. And in one of my service areas, I have over 800 square miles with a clinic that is open 5 days a week, and we have no hospital, and folks have to go 100 miles in any direction to get to a hospital. So it's extremely important to ensure that they have access to primary care or outpatient services, because it's just quite simply a long haul. So we have multiple programs, multiple service lines under our MIH umbrella. We have a chronic disease management, which is very simple. Think diabetes, think heart disease. So what's unique about our system is that we partner with our local FQHC, which is a federally qualified health center. Prior to this partnership, I couldn't spell FQHC, let alone know what they did. We very jokingly referred to them as the free clinic down the road. And now they are probably my closest allies and partners in business and in patient care. And the third partner that we have is an organization called Community Asset Builders out of the Jefferson City area. And you said funding. And while we currently get $0 reimbursed from payers, we are surviving on grant dollars. And where Community Asset Builders comes in is they help not only with grant rights, but they have created connections with different departments under Department of Health and Senior Services, Bureau of Chronic Disease, Primary Care, Rural Healthcare, that get pass-through dollars from the federal government. And then we've been able to tap into those dollars because of Community Asset Builders as kind of the connector of the worlds, that they didn't know what we did, we didn't know what they did. And we're a service-based industry, and they look to contract with people for services. And so then we connected those dots. We have an SUD, OUD, behavioral health, so substance use disorder, opiate use disorder, and behavioral health, or BH, that we all struggle with in EMS, where we're working with crisis stabilization units to be able to do medical clearance by community paramedic and arrange for either an inpatient admission from the field or a crisis stabilization outpatient type visit with the third finger of Suboxone initiation in the field by community paramedic. Our motto is diverse, inclusive, whole person care. So heavy emphasis on the social determinants of health. And we all know that our patients don't care about managing their blood pressure if they don't know where they're going to sleep tonight, and they don't care about managing their diabetes if they don't know where their next meal is going to come from. Where my clinical brain and my nerd hat comes in is not only on the financial side, but the quality measure side. So historically in EMS, what quality indicators do we measure from an outcome base? When I think back, I go, well, cardiac arrest, how many times did we get them there alive? And then what's the rate of ROSC, and what's the rate of people walking out of the hospital? And so we adopted the federal standards, or the HEDIS measures that our FQHCs are required to follow for indicators of quality outcomes. And we applied that to our MIH cohort. So I'm now able to benchmark how well we're making diabetic patients better against my local clinic, all the clinics in the state, or the clinics on a national level. And that's what got us recognition by the Health Resource Service Administration, or HRSA, as we took the first place win for our local MIH network in Washington County, again, with our three partners, two other partners plus my service, Great Minds Health Center, the FQHC, and Community Asset Builders, for the first ever Primary Health Innovation Challenge. And it was around this model of collaboration, whole person care, utilization of community health workers as patient navigators, and then looping in whatever services were necessary. And when the C-suite was presenting us with the award, they said, you know, we'd always seen the synergy between the FQHCs and EMS, but could never connect the dots. How did you guys connect the dots? And I said, it was just relationships and honest conversations. When you look back at mission, vision, values, the FQHCs exist as a safety net. When you look at EMS, we exist as a safety net. And so we're just trying to take a reactive piece of our mission, our vision, our values, and transition it, a part of it, not even all of it, right? So we have overdoses in the moment. We're still handling those as a reactive response, but then trying to get ahead of the game and be a bit proactive with those cases. We have some trials going on with some of our MCOs or managed care organizations in Missouri. We have our local Missouri Medicaid at the table, realizing the value of what we're doing. But I've been very, very specific and trying to drive the message from a statewide standpoint. And I think we're doing a good job at it, at least from a vision of, yes, we know that we can show that we're saving the system money, but also making sick people better and improving quality measures and improving patient outcomes. And I think that's extremely important to tie in.
Wow, you've hit so many points here, and I couldn't even begin to summarize. But, you know, I'm from the school that believes MIH isn't a word, it's actually a list, right? If you read it down from top down, it's mobile, it's integrated, and it's healthcare. So it's actually a list, not a name or a title. And you're living up to that. I think we could run a whole show, seminar, webinar, briefing session on grant funding. You know, grant funding is actually the band-aid, not the solution. But, you know, congratulations on at least getting a band-aid fix for it. But hopefully, and also we talked about the demise of ET3, but actually you're doing that one thing we wanted ET3 to do, which was to deliver data, outcome data, and rationale for funding this fully. So, you know, I'm already looking forward to seeing, you know, some of that published perhaps, Justin. I'd love to help you do that. So thank you. Now, Melinda, you probably have a very similar story, but you're actually from a hospital-based EMS system. And, you know, it seems in my head, there's some sort of, you know, to's and fro's here that a hospital system admirably is doing an MIH program. Potentially the bean counters could say, no, we want them all admitted because, you know, it's more money for us, but clearly they're doing the right thing and actually keeping patients in the community. So explain how that all works.
Yes. First of all, Justin, I would like to say I agree with Rob. You do a very good job at eloquently describing your program. I hope I can do my program anywhere near just as much justice as you've done yours. So my program, as I said, we originally started out under a GMR umbrella, which GMR would be Global Medical Response, and that is a 911 provider across the U.S. Our GMR decided they would focus on 911, helicopter, fire, and EMS last year. And as a part of that, any ancillary services, including the nurse navigation, which worked with the ET3, and then my branch being community paramedicine was up for sale. Our hospital system that we contracted with, thankfully, decided to take us on and make us a part of their system. We are a true multidisciplinary system where we have physicians working along with the paramedics and the nurses and the case managers, as well as other community services that case managers normally deal with or other services that we've been able to introduce them with to help our patients. So in November of 23, the hospital system that we contracted with brought us in and essentially created a new branch for us. They did stick us under their ambulance service that they do own, but we have our own little branch where we provide the advanced care at home under this community paramedic waiver or Medicare waiver that allows community paramedics to do so. We start by doing clinical stability tools, which are run by the physicians and the admitting group at our hospital. They take a look at the patients from the inpatient side where the hospitalist is currently seeing them. And then we have a physician that stays with us in the command center, as we call it. And between the physician in hospital brick and mortar and the physician at the command center, they help deem which patients meet the clinical stability to go home to continue their admission. Once we have done the clinical stability and determined that patients do meet the conditions, we move on to social stability, where we verify they have heat and air, running water, a stable place that they call home. And when they are deemed clinically stable and socially stable, as long as they meet the Medicare requirements to continue advanced care at home, we move them to their house immediately. There is no waiting for a bed on the floor. There is no waiting for transport. There is no waiting for housekeeping to get in a room to clean it. We can show up and take them directly home and begin their admission within an hour of knowing that that patient qualifies for the program. Once we move our patients into the house, the physician will consult with them. They have nursing care available to them 24/7. We provide them several ways to get in contact with staff, whether it be a tablet they can use to talk to somebody, a phone, or basically an emergency button that serves similar to a life alert button. So once they're home, we continue to provide community paramedic visits twice a day, every day on these patients. They also have the ability to contact nursing staff or physician staff 24/7. One of the things I find very cool about my program, or quite amazing actually, is the state of Tennessee actually took the initiative a couple of years ago to develop parameters for community paramedicine. And the parameters allow for us to become licensed and have community paramedic on our licensureship. So we do have a standard set forth at which we have to meet to even qualify to do this program. And it's 5 years as a paramedic. And then in addition to that, the community paramedic program that we have to pass successfully. 10 of us started out in this program and all 10 of us passed. And at the time we passed, that brought our state up to 17 community paramedics. So we were a very small population of community paramedics, but some of the only in the state that were taking on this task. The hospital system that we work with was absolutely amazing. The physicians from day one took a leap of faith, having never worked with paramedics in the way that they do now, absolutely just jumped in feet first. And when we say that something is going on with a patient, we get their trust 100%, and it's happened that way from day one. Same with the nursing staff. Trust from day one, which is a huge aspect in multidisciplinary care, I think, because so many paramedics and EMS experience hostility, I feel, from whether it be nursing staff or physician in the ERs, but we've never experienced this on the inpatient side. We are able to provide wonderful care to our patients because of this. The inpatients that we have are getting better faster. They're not getting admitted as often, and their predicted hospital stays have been reduced by 2 or 3 days sometimes, which is quite amazing.
And 2 or 3 days equates to a lot of dollars. My neck is aching from just nodding in agreement with you guys. Before we go any further, we're just going to stop for this message.
Since 2010, EMS on the Hill Day has brought EMS professionals together in Washington, D.C. to advocate for the needs of our patients and the EMS profession. Join us on Capitol Hill from April 17th and 18th, 2024, to visit with congressional leaders and staff to help them understand the needs of EMS in our communities and states, especially during this critical time. We'll begin with a pre-Hill briefing to meet as a group, hear the details of our request to Congress, and answer questions. Hill Day includes both seasoned advocates and first-time EMS advocates, so it's a great opportunity to network, learn, and gain insight on the federal legislation and its impact on state legislative efforts. Register today. The fee is only $20, which includes 2 receptions and congressional scheduling services.
So we're looking forward to seeing you at EMS on the Hill. It's coming up very, very soon now, and looking forward to meeting, greeting, saying hello. And, you know, if you have an opinion on how NEMT radio is going, let me know. I'll be there live and on scene. And I think Justin will as well. He's already told us that. So we look forward to meeting Justin in person as well. So don't forget, if you are listening to NEMT radio on whatever platform you're taking it on, and we're on many platforms right now, please hit the like, the subscribe button, because every time an episode of NEMT radio drops, then you get a little notification that we're here. Remember, we publish 2 a month, usually the 1st and the 15th of the month. And so just listen in for the next edition of NEMT Radio, or indeed go into the back catalogue, on the platform that you're listening to us on. We have an amazing array of guests and an amazing array of topics all about the work and life of the National Association of EMTs. So before we went to the break, Melinda, you had sparked my interest actually in talking about the community paramedics you have. You have a state program, obviously you have a sort of certification, etc. But I'm really interested now in drill this down. And as I said to you guys in the break, that certainly from my days back in the UK, you know, what's the difference between a community paramedic and a paramedic? Well, the paramedic knows when your ear's cut off, but has no idea what the red rash is down your ear. In other words, there's an advanced piece of sort of primary care, possibly pharmacology, etc., involved in being that community paramedic. But what are the key elements of the education that you get in order to become a community paramedic in your state?
So as I mentioned, Tennessee, which is the state that I'm based out of, actually developed a licensureship level for this. First and foremost, you have to be a paramedic for at least 5 years. They then describe community paramedic as somebody who is able to provide services to the community more broadly than a paramedic in areas like primary care, public health, disease management, prevention and wellness, oral health, and even mental health. What that looked like for our program when they did the hiring, they hired people and brought in paramedics that had a very diverse background. Out of the 10 of us, one of us was a PA who was our manager. Of course, he's a very educated gentleman. We then, the nine of us that are left, I believe between us, we had three master's degrees, several bachelor's degrees, and experience that has taken some of us all over the world. We have paramedics that have served in Iraq as medical paramedics that have served on oil rigs. We also have several that have worked in ER, cath labs, outpatient clinics providing cardiac services. So we had a very experienced and diverse group of paramedics that were brought in to start this. We all became certified through IBSC, or the International Board of Specialty Certifications, which our original employer was absolutely the only one in Tennessee certified to do. Since we have made the transition into the hospital program that I work for now, our hospital program has developed a program and become certified by the state of Tennessee to also provide community paramedic curriculum. And hopefully we'll be turning out another class in about 3 to 4 months of about another 12 community paramedics.
That's great. I'm an old soldier in the medical corps, and you just hit upon a really good point there that I just want to make, that you know, we shouldn't write off people, military medics, because winning the battle and the trauma that goes with it probably takes 24 hours. Managing the population after the battle can take weeks, months, if not years, and therefore there's more skill in the primary care aspects and more utility in the primary care aspects than actually the trauma aspects. And everybody just think about that for a second, because of course what we want to do is be a very attractive to military medics transitioning into EMS, and the amount of skill they bring, think about what I've just said, is phenomenal. So Justin, you've got a community paramedic set up there. I mean, does it mirror Melinda's program, or how do you define, identify and credential a community paramedic where you are?
So it's very similar, and my hat's off to you, Melinda. I was nodding along from the program of taking the folks inpatient, and I echo the sentiments of it was a little weird at first, the paramedics working with the primary care folks on a one-on-one basis, but fast forward a handful of years now and my community paramedics live in the same hallway with the nurse practitioners and the physicians at the clinic, and there's now a mutual respect. Whether it's a sick person walks through the front door at the clinic, or we connect the primary care patient in the field via telehealth to a nurse prac inside the clinic. So you see that true. I kept thinking that it's just true integrated care. That's exactly what we're doing. We have different faces and names. So back to Rob's original question, because I go down rabbit holes sometimes. In Missouri, we have a license endorsement. Missouri is very unique in that we have no state dictated scope of practice for a paramedic. We are licensed as physician extenders, and so we are a medical director driven state. What our community paramedic education requires is that it be completed by a program approved to offer initial paramedic education which means we need to be blessed by the COA or the accrediting body, the Commission on the Accreditation of Emergency Medical Services Programs. That's always a mouthful to say. Everybody refers it to as the COA. So we are a COA blessed program, which means you're approved through or have a relationship with a program of higher learning. So our internal community paramedic education program is a semester course in conjunction with our local community college. And as a finger off of our paramedic program, our EMT program, and we went ahead and threw community health worker under that umbrella as well. And so when we looked at the curriculum requirements that are outlined in statute, it's focused on primary care and public health and all of the things that Melinda said, or at least very similar. From the practical aspect is I took a nurse who worked EMS as well. And I said, okay, I want you to take a 10-year paramedic as you're developing this curriculum. I'm going to give you no structure other than take a 10-year paramedic that is good at their job. And I want you to make them half a floor nurse, half a hospice nurse, half a public health nurse, and throw in some wound care just for fun. And her initial response is, oh God, they're going to hate me. And I said, no, we need to think about this, right? And Rob said, we know what to do when the ear's cut off, but we don't know how to look down the ear and identify what that rash is, right? What did I learn about wound care in paramedic school? What did we learn about wound care in paramedic school? Cover it up, screen for sepsis, volume resuscitate. Now let's fast forward to 2024, draw cultures or broad spectrum and start broad spectrum antibiotics. That's wound care. So when I look at a wound and I go, oh God, that looks terrible, a wound care nurse will come in and say, actually, it's not that bad. Let's make sure they have the right calorie intake so that they can handle the healing process. And so I think it was kind of the molding of those two worlds and understanding we each have different subspecialties. And what I find now is we do things I never dreamed of. Oral health. How many times have you gotten the 911 call for a toothache? Well, I can look in someone's mouth and go, that's an abscess. What's the ER going to do for an abscess tooth? Antibiotics, maybe some pain medicines, send them home and tell them to call a dentist. So what do with it from the MIH or CP side of the house? We facilitate a telehealth visit, confirm it's an abscess, get a prescription called in for antibiotics, plus minus some pain medicine, and we coordinate an emergent dental visit and tag them for a follow-up in a few days and see if the abscess is getting better. It's really that whole person model that we are really trying to push around from the education side of the house as well. And then from a continuing education standpoint, we're currently rewriting, making some adjustments as MIH expands in Missouri. We're making some adjustments. We didn't address reciprocity very well. So we're a part of the state compact. But we're a part of the state compact for our base license. We didn't talk about our endorsements or add-ons. So can I go to Colorado right now and be a paramedic? Answer, yes, because we're within the compact. But can I go there as a community paramedic? Ah, we didn't think about that. So I think that'll be an interesting conversation of how are we crossing state lines when from an education standpoint in this whole MIH CP space, if that makes sense.
Wow. I mean, again, we're adding to the list. One of the questions, as we sort of come to a close, is clearly an advantage of having programs in the community is assisting with the reduction. You mentioned substance use disorder, you know, the epidemic crisis disaster of you know, the after action of the drug cartels distribution system. Also, high utilizers. I love the acronym HUG, High Utilizer Group, Melinda. I mean, how are you reducing or assisting with the reduction of those high utilizers? Because, of course, you know, they are a revolving door, and which keeps ambulance services very, very busy where clearly a good community paramedic MIH intervention can stop that door revolving.
My hospital system is currently addressing the HUG group through admission, essentially. So when we bring those patients in and we are seeing frequent admissions, we are doing everything that we can through a normal hospital stay to keep them well. Unfortunately, we don't do a lot outside of their current admission, but we have plans moving forward to focus on acute care follow-up. So when we have all of those HUGs identified, I will go check on them, or one of the other community paramedics may go check on them after their admission, even if they did not come to our program. It is a future endeavor for sure that I think we'll be very successful at.
Time has flown by, and I think I'd love to do a part two with you guys and really talk about the outcomes and the data. You know, Justin, as you mentioned, it's vitally important to know the outcomes in order to justify the case. So maybe we can come back again and do that. But you've raised a number of really amazing issues, identified the programs that you're working through. And so if people want to really just check in with you and catch up and maybe get some, you know, more detail, how can they do that, Justin?
Absolutely. A couple of different avenues. We have a website. It's mihnetwork.org. And there's links to all of our email addresses and our different projects. Or feel free to contact me directly. It's first initial last name. So jduncan@wcadems.org. And happy to chat offline or with any individuals looking to operate in the space, ask questions, always enjoy a healthy debate. Feel free to reach out. We can have a conversation and look forward to meeting you in person, Rob, in Washington, D.C., and perhaps some others. And there's really some cool stuff going on in the space. And I think we have strength in numbers. And I learn more every time I talk to a different person. I'm jotting down notes from hearing from Melinda and what she's doing. And that's the coolest part of doing these types of things. So I truly appreciate the invite to be a part of the program.
Great. Thank you so much. Melinda, how can we follow, get in touch?
My email where I can be reached at is melinda.wilson. So first dot last name @gmr.net. I'd be more than happy to, as Justin said, have any kind of discussion, debate, or learn from anybody.
So, Melinda, thank you for that. And thank you so much for giving up your own time on the cruise that you're on. And kudos to the cruise company for the secured nature of the internet here, because we haven't lost any signals. So thank you to Starlink. But also, listen, it's been an amazing discussion. And I've certainly, again, been jotting down notes, as Justin noted. You know, we had a great discussion on grant funding, CP certification, the business model. More importantly, my favorite four-letter word, data, and its outcomes, doing the right thing. And again, you know, sometimes these things are a loss leader, but sometimes you just have to do the right thing. And clearly, from a community paramedic qualification perspective, that reciprocity that enables you to go from one place to another. So actually, in the 30 or so minutes here, we've covered an amazing amount of ground. And I do hope that people contact you, hit you up for some information on what you're up to. I look forward to talking to you both again. But for the minute, Melinda and Justin, thanks very much for joining me on NAEMT Radio.
Thanks, Rob. That was great.
Thank you, Rob.
Well, we look forward to posting this show. Don't forget, as I said before, we bring NAEMT Radio to you twice a month, usually on the 1st and about the 15th of the month. So look out for the next installment. That was Justin Duncan and Melinda Wilson. As always, I've been Rob Lawrence. This has been NAEMT Radio. And until next time, bye for now.